and as a result of the Hispanic influx, because of job opportunities here, everyone felt that we'll go ahead and build the buildings and provide the programs, and if the economy falters or whatever, if the growth continues, then we'll build something. And the numbers at that time were at elementary school. When I was principal in 1980, we had to find a place for 850 kids. Mm-hmm. That was our peak enrollment. And that campus was built for about 350. And mm-hmm. we had to have portables to put these children. They came in after Labor Day, so there was no way that anybody could predict, you know, what was going to happen. I can remember that very well, because the day after Labor Day, all of a sudden all of these mothers and children came in that nobody had seen or knew anything about. Here they were, and we enrolled about 50 children that day.
Oh, my word.
And most of them were first and second graders.
Even have enough teachers?
Well, yeah.
They just had to make do.
Yeah,
huh?
Well, until we could, we added an eighth first grade teacher that year. And it was really a madhouse in there for a while. And the feeling at the time was that if the economy falters or if the industry, you know, does not grow anymore or whatever, that they would either drop out or move back or whatever. Everybody just felt like it was not a long range thing. Mm. There was no need in considering a building program at the elementary school, because there weren't going to be any more coming in, that we had peaked in our enrollment. So the board addressed the issue of a new high school, looking at the fact that these children could possibly stay. And if they did, it would take 2 or 3 years to build a school. The numbers would grow from elementary to junior high, and the junior high would come on over here, and then we could reshuffle the grade alignments and you know, with the addition of a new high school. Mm-hmm. So the decision was made to ask for a bond election for a comprehensive new high school plan, including the athletic facility. And at the same time, there was an 80% increase in taxes to pay for that. The public felt like that there were two things, or the way I perceive the public's feeling was that the 80% increase in taxes was too much at one time.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They just could not see raising taxes that much. It would have been too much especially for some of these people on fixed income. It just hurt them too bad when they paid $25 an acre for that land 40 years ago, and then all of a sudden they're paying more in a year for taxes than they paid for the whole property to begin with. It was just inconceivable to raise their taxes that much. The other thing that I can see as being a reason for its failure, it may not be that fair to say this, but it seems to me that some of the comments I heard, were racially motivated, that they didn't want to provide our tax money to provide these facilities, for these people coming in here at that time.
Go ahead.
Okay. Actually, that feeling, I think, was strong among a large segment of the population, but with the question of the 80% tax increase, I think that was equally as strong. Mm. So it was more than one thing that caused the bond issue to fail as badly as it did.
I think another problem, and this was just as a parent who had a child in elementary school at that time, is that we saw the huge need there,
mm-hmm.
and knew there wasn't such a need at high school.
Right.
And thinking, why are they doing it this way?
Yeah, yeah. Right. This was another factor. You're absolutely right. The teachers at the elementary school were the ones who were facing the problem every day.
Right.
And it was very difficult for them to support, I think, building a new high school when they were the ones that were having to deal with the situation then.
Mm. Has the population, it has decreased some over there, hasn't it? But not.
Well, the question came up, you know, as to when the economy falters and industry cuts back, that the Mexican population would leave. But they haven't left. They came over here for the same reason our ancestors came, and that was to make a better life for themselves and their children. And it's a perfectly American goal, mm-hmm. you know, ideal for them to follow through with. And they're here in this town, as great as we all know that it is, and they want to be a part of this community, and they are, and they're producing, and they're becoming members of the mm-hmm. of the community, and consequently they're staying, and we're seeing those numbers of kids with Spanish surnames increasing at the high school level. They're not dropping out like everyone thought that they might. They're staying in the high school, and the numbers at the elementary school are decreasing. They're around 700 now. Mm. But the reason they're decreasing is because there are no more families coming in. Mm-hmm. So in the sense that the school population has leveled off, it has, but it has not decreased. We've been hovering around 1850 for several years now. The overall population is steady. The junior high is well over 600, and the high school expects to hit about probably 530, 540 this year, mm-hmm. and which will make it a good medium-sized 3A high school. But the total numbers of students has not changed. The shifts in the population are there. But still, at the elementary school, we have a situation where on 10 acres of land, we've got 700 kids on a campus that was built for 300. So we're still twice as many over there than what we should have.
Well, so there is still a great sizes, need. Our class sizes being mandated is being smaller and smaller at elementary level.
Right.
You don't have the facilities.
We weren't really hurt that much. Some school districts, were running 25 and 30 in first grade. Mm-hmm. Well, we were doing great in kindergarten and first grade and second grade. Mm-hmm. The situation this year was that at second grade, if the projected numbers from first grade go into second grade, then our teacher-pupil ratio would have been, I think, 23-1, whereas we're mandated for it to be 22. and so we were just, less than 10 kids over what we should have provided. The law says that in order to request a waiver from this 22-1 ratio, that we have to seek out all other means of trying to find additional classrooms, including the possibility of building portables, including finding non-school-owned space, and looking at all the avenues that may be available before you request a waiver. Well, if we had requested non-school-owned space, I'm sure we could have found someplace. But I don't want to send children in second grade, one classroom of children in second grade, halfway across town, to a building that somebody provides for us. So actually we have two campuses, one for a second grade classroom and then one for all the other children. And as far as portable buildings, there was no reason why we couldn't build a portable. I mean, we have the money to build it. And so really we could have requested a waiver from that 22-1 mandate, but we would not have been fulfilling the spirit of the law. We probably could have gotten one, but I just didn't feel like that was in the best interest of the school district to do it that way. Mm-hmm. So I presented this proposal to the board, and it was decided that we should go ahead and try to build two more classrooms in addition to the one that we have for the pre-K. Now, the numbers on pre-K are such that we needed two rooms. Our magic number there was 44. We have 49 already signed up. Mm. And
You'll have more after Labor Day.
And who knows? There's no way to know. And so we had to go ahead, we decided to go ahead and build two classrooms for the pre-K and then add a second grade teacher. and reduce that number in second grade. So we have 8 first grade teachers and 7 second grade teachers. So in the first grade, we were under the 22-1, well under that. But when we went up to second grade, where they only had 7 teachers, well, that shot the ratio up a little bit. So that's why we had to add the second grade teacher. So we will be fine this year, but we'll have to have those mandates of 22-1 through the fourth grade eventually. And so where we're going to put portable buildings on the elementary school campus now.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to our greatest need is being facilities. We have to do something with our facilities, with 38 portable classrooms district-wide.
Mm-hmm.
In order to find out what we do, find out what we need, I've drawn up a plan for a facility study that will be presented to the board on the 30th of this month. The concept has already been approved. The names of potential members of that committee has been submitted to Mr. Rohn. He and I have developed a preliminary list to send out to the board and let them analyze, and then the names of the committee would be announced on the 30th. And the membership will be composed of one teacher from each campus, plus one administrator, and the remaining members would be members, just community people, trying to find people who represent all segments of the community. The purpose of the committee would be to analyze the needs of the district and determine what those needs are based on requirements of the law, based on the curriculum offerings that we may propose. Just try to cover all of the areas that are of importance to the school district and present their findings to the board. And hopefully, according to the timeline that we have set up, we would have some sort of information to present to the public in some fashion. I don't know how the board would want to handle it, but at least the committee report would be submitted to the board by possibly mid-year. It would probably take the fall semester to examine this.
Okay, you're talking about like in January, February?
Yeah, somewhere along that. According to the timeline we have set up now, they may want to take longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's...
Well, when you're talking about a big, you don't want to rush into anything.
No.
Uh-uh. You want to take your time and
right.
Make sure you...
And
well, you want something the people will support this time.
But it
sure.
has to be a well thought out program. You can't just slap something out and expect the people to buy it. It would have to be a well thought out program with a lot of indication as to which direction we're going all along, from the beginning of the process until the end. So that everybody will have time to analyze it, find out exactly what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we would, you know, be wanting a lot of public input, and hopefully would get all of the concerns out of the way if it should ever reach the point of a bond issue. And we don't know, we haven't used that term and have been trying to stay away from that term right now. But understanding that has to be one of the options in the future. But
mm-hmm.
but again, that's too far ahead to say right now. The committee may recommend to the board that we just continue to do what we're doing, which is to make do. And
mm-hmm. yeah.
if that's what the committee says, then that's what we'll do. If that's what, you know, the board has the option of accepting the report or declaring that they want to do something different, you know. So it'll be up to those 7 people to make that decision.
And thinking about the school board, do they think that facilities is one of our biggest needs?
Oh yeah.
Do they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They really do.
Definitely. They realize that, and they are very aware of what the situation is.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also keenly attuned to the concerns of the public, and they want to be sure that this process is handled correctly.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm talking to Mr. Ramsey because he was here and helped with things whenever they built the new high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him why there was a difference, you know, in our bond issue being turned down that time and theirs not. He said, well, everybody knew we needed a new building. You know, everybody in the whole town knew that we needed this. And I think that's part of what y'all are going to have to do, mm-hmm. is make sure mm-hmm. everybody knows how bad it is.
Well, I think if anyone would just take time to drive over to elementary school and look.
And look.
And find out where we're going to put more portables.
Yeah.
Because the law, again, this is going back to what the state requires. And they're saying you've got to have a 22-to-1 ratio. And I'm all for that. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
That's the way it has to be. Those lower numbers mean increased learning for the kids.
Yeah.
And nobody's complaining about that. But the fact is, they're mandating this and not providing any money to pay for it. And it falls right back in our laps locally mm-hmm. to come up with the money.
About it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I know when I was talking to Miss Burkhalter, she had like 45 kids in the third or fourth grade class when she first started teaching. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, she said she didn't really teach them anything. You just can't. Yeah. You're just spending your time doing other. But aren't you mandated at the amount of playground area that you have and all that too? Or does that just kind of go by the wayside as you put up?
There are guidelines, but those are difficult to enforce. I mean, what's the agency going to do? Yeah, right. What's the agency going to do to a school district that doesn't? You know, it's got to be really a flagrant violation of the law. If they came over and looked at the size of our playground and then looked at what goes on in our classrooms, they couldn't close our school down
Mm-mm.
because we teach school.
Right.
And if it were a situation where it was so bad that we could not hold classes and could not teach school, then they could threaten our accreditation.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't keep us, the fact that we're on that campus over there and we're crowded the way we are, doesn't keep our teachers from doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing the agency can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
The only ones that can change the status quo over there are the people of Diboll.
Curriculum. How do you feel like we stack up curriculum-wise and programs that we offer?
I've been on Southern Association visits to 8 or 10 schools where I've had an opportunity to be a visiting team member and go into different schools and analyze their program. Most of what I've looked at is social studies, but when you go in and talk to kids and the teachers and talk to your fellow visiting members, you learn a lot about that school and what they're capable of doing. One of the most enlightening things about some of those visits is to go into a school and bring in the top 8 or 10 kids in school and set them down in a panel discussion and let us as visiting team members grill those students about their school. And that is really, mm-hmm. it is really enlightening. Of course, it has to be, you know, the sharpest kids in school. And they'll tell you exactly the way it is. because they are anxious to share their thoughts. And when I've done this, I've come back in almost every case either impressed with what we're doing or have come back with an idea about what would make ours better.
Mm-hmm.
And having looked at others and having looked at ours, I think we do a terrific job. I know in elementary and some junior high grades, we're running circles around so many schools around here that are accredited by the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools. And we're doing so many more good things than what they're doing. And we're not accredited. And yet they are. And the reason we're not accredited is because we never have applied.
And I started to say, why not?
Yeah. And we never have applied for accreditation. But as far as program, off the top of my head, I can't think of a single thing that we could change at elementary. I can think of very few changes that we can make at junior high. But I can think of several things that we can do at high school. But all of them are expensive.
Oh.
And one of the things that caused me to be concerned about the changes at the high school level was when I was a teacher at high school, I had an opportunity to visit the Naval Academy
mm-hmm.
on one of these tours that the Navy pays for, and And they flew us to Annapolis and gave us a week at the academy visiting all of their facilities and looking at their programs and stuff. And I came back with a real serious doubt that any of our kids graduating from Diboll High School could go from straight from Diboll High School into the Naval Academy. Mm. The math and science at our school is really not such that a person with that kind of who needs a background in math and science, they couldn't make it there. And our sharpest kids, you know, who are going to pick it up and who are going to learn and who catch on quickly, could possibly take some coursework maybe at a prep school, mm-hmm. and get the necessary background very easily. I'm not saying that our kids are too dumb to go. I'm just saying that the courses that we offer, calculus, trigonometry, and the higher maths, we don't offer on a regular basis, regular enough that would allow enough students to participate in some kind of in that kind of situation. Hmm. So,
what they're not offered because not that many people take them.
Right.
Just that few.
Yeah, there's only a handful of our kids that take those courses. Consequently, they're not offered every year, and they being not offered every year, they don't have an opportunity to take all those courses that they need. They can't take. Well, I'm not sure exactly which ones they can and can't take. I'm not that familiar with the courses, but they can't take all of those courses. They have to take one or the other, mm. and some of those higher maths over at the high school, simply because there are not enough kids to offer them. So in order to implement a program like that, we would have to make a firm commitment to math and science and let a teacher teach one class with three kids, you know, of differential analysis or something. if that were, you know, and that's possible. You know, we offer those things, but they just are only offered to those on an occasional basis where there's an interest shown.
Mm-hmm. How many children do we have that go from high school to college? Do y'all keep records on that as far as
I'd like to do that. I've never analyzed that, so I really don't know. But I think that would be an interesting study to see how many really do.
Go on. Oh. The only thing I think to ask you lastly is just what do you dream and what do you want to accomplish while you're superintendent?
Yeah.
Should be interesting 20 years from now.
Yes. Now, yeah, it's not fair for you to ask me that question. I've been asking all of the new applicants who come in here who haven't had any opportunity to teach anywhere yet what they're going to be doing 40 years from now. It seems to throw them for a loop, but now you're asking me that question.
Turnabout's always fair play. Hmm.
Well, I really think that what I'd like to see first of all, is to try to create an atmosphere and a tone in the campus, at the campus level, so that teachers feel comfortable in doing their jobs. I'd like to create an atmosphere so that they don't have to worry about anything except teaching. And if they can concentrate all their efforts on that, based upon the kind of results that we've been able to achieve in the learning process up to this point that I've been able to observe over the years, I think the results for the kids would be fantastic. And considering that we already have kids who perform exceptionally well on achievement tests, I'm talking about individual children. Mm-hmm. Overall, we're low in a lot of areas, but I'm talking about for the exceptional children, I'd like to see programs, you know, to emphasize their needs. But in the long term, if all the teachers can teach in an atmosphere where they feel comfortable in and can devote their full time to teaching, then that would be a major hurdle. At the present time, they can't concentrate on strictly teaching when they have to worry about whether they're going to be 10 minutes late because the cafeteria is stacked up full of other kids. And they say, well, if I leave early now, if I cut short this lesson, if I leave early now, I can get in. But if I wait two more minutes and cover it and finish covering this subject, well, then I'm going to have a problem getting into the cafeteria. If they're concerned about things like that, and if they're concerned whether they're going to get their feet wet and they're going to have to take time to put on their raincoats and their boots and things to go from the portable building into the PE class or wherever they're going to go next, well, those little things, you know, interfere with the teaching process. Mm-hmm. So all that has to do with facilities. It has to do with providing the elements for good teaching situations. And I would hope to be able to try to pull all of those things together. Mm-hmm.